Okay, all right. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I am your host, Chris Lamberth, recording this episode on Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. And I have with me a very special guest. You know him, you love him, from the Making Podcasts Great Again podcast and the newly revitalized Righteous Prick podcast, J.L. Covan. How the hell are you?
Hey, good. I'd appreciate if you'd say you know him, some of you love him, J.L. Covan.
No, they love you, man. whether they want to admit it or not, they love you because the clicks are always, the listens are always there, and people want to know what's going on.
Oh, well, good. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm now a man with two podcasts and no career. So I brought back the Righteous Prick podcast, maybe just for 2020, but I feel like there's a lot on my mind and a lot of big things. And in case the world ends in 2020, I want a record for the aliens to
yeah.
hear and know that there were angry beige people here.
Of course, man. When the shit went down Thursday night into, I guess, what was that, Thursday night into Friday? When the bombing happened? When did that
yeah.
happen?
Yeah. Right. It was because it was right before I was at, like, I went into work the next day. So that, yeah, it had to be Thursday night.
It's really like, I just said, God, can we please make it until, can we just hold off until The Last of Us Part 2 comes out?
Hey, you might be able to live it. You might not just have to play it.
I think I would die. Like, I believe in myself to a certain degree, but I think they might get me. The cordyceps would fuck me up. I don't know. I don't know. Do you think we'll make it until a little after Labor Day?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we've got, we've got the most guns, we've got the most bombs, so that's worth something.
Yeah.
But, it shouldn't be, unfortunately, people keep getting sort of, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad. But
yeah.
When you elect a person, when he was elected in 2016, I said, basically, it's like we've elected the anti-LeBron James of political skills. Like, in other words, he's a zero in all facets of the game.
Right.
Intellect, intellectual curiosity, morality, experience, tolerance, acceptance, like inspirational leadership. Like he's a zero in all those. And this is what you get. You have a racist. I tweet this and sometimes I'm shocked the language, but I'm like, he's a racist rapist who doesn't like to read, has no experience and might be going through early dementia.
Mm-hmm.
What did people think would be the outcome?
Right.
And, you know, so it's sort of a close to worst case scenario, but this was sort of on the table as,
yeah.
you know, as one of the options that could realistically happen if he was elected. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you say that, I don't know. When people say they vote against their interests, I go, not if your interests are bigotry.
Right. Well, it's like I've said this a number of times. Racism isn't a deal breaker, and hate right. and putting not considering the livelihood of other people who may be less fortunate than you or who may have less than you, just like all that's put aside, and definitely racism isn't a deal breaker. I had a mutual friend of ours talk to me about something. I was like, well, you know, he was telling me about this friend. I was like, well, that's kind of racist. And he was like, well, he's a good guy. I was like, yeah, okay, see, that's not a deal breaker for you, obviously.
Yeah, like, to me, and what I can, you know, my experience on this, as people will jokingly say, well, JL, that's your Whiteside coming through.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll be my next album. It'll be called Hassan Whiteside. I think I've heard, you know, racist comments in my own family. That's what the joys with being on the front lines of interracial marriage.
Right.
Is that you see people kind of, you see it's almost like watching the evolutionary chart of tolerance. And I'm at that phase where that helps get us to this phase. But I'm, you know, I've seen prejudice. I've heard it in my own family.
Right.
And it's, so I have an acceptance and a sort of tolerance for, you know, hey, when you know, I don't always, if I hear somebody say something, I don't always immediately think you are a racist and bad person.
Yeah.
But I also don't think, in some cases you can hear it and go, oh, you're a bad person. Like I can tell, and things come into play in that. Like if somebody is sort of a blue collar dude, mm-hmm. and I hear them say something ignorant, but it's not, you know, I can sometimes go, I'm not sure. I'm not willing to make a judgment yet on this person. Now, if I learn more about them or talk to them more, I can be like, okay, easy example is at the Brokerage Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
A guy starts talking to me, and he makes one comment, and I go, it was about football players. So he was saying, hey, you played football. And I go, no, just, you know, used to play basketball and ate myself into football shape.
Yeah, I remember.
And,
yeah.
And then he goes, he was like, you look like an offensive lineman. I was like, great. I used to look like, you know, a tight end. Now I look like an O lineman.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, offensive linemen are a lot of times the smartest guys on the field.
Right.
And I go, okay. A lot of people have told me, I've heard that before in terms
I've
of
told
strategy.
You that. I've told you that.
Oh, sure. I've heard it from different people.
Yeah.
But they're the smartest guy. Sometimes they're the smartest guys on the field. I go, oh, cool. And then he leaned in and like made like a mocking hush voice and was like, and they're often white. Now, some people might have gone, oh, this dude's a bigot. But to me, I'm in a comedy club.
Yeah.
He did it in a way that was like hammy.
Sure.
So he was like, I'm a white guy and I'm saying something that could be perceived as racist, but I'm not really saying the racist
right,
thing.
Right.
So I was like, so some people could have heard that and been like, oh, fuck this dude. Other people like me go, all right, now I got to have one foot out the door in case this gets weird, but I'm not leaving just yet.
Yeah.
Then he got me an Uber and pushed me out the door metaphorically, because mm-hmm. then he goes, not that the black players can't be smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh
boy.
And then he goes, but you know, and then he does this like shimmy move and goes, but it's a lot of instinct. And mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
So in other words, that's a rapid version. That's like a sped up time lapse photography version of what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
That there are little benchmarks, and I think I'm a little more forgiving than some people. But once you cross certain benchmarks, I have no problem like being like, you are done.
Yeah.
But I have maybe more benchmarks than others, and I think some of that comes from my life experience.
Right. I think
you know, and just like if I hear somebody who's very educated that I assume has been exposed to more things, that has, you know what I mean? Like that I have almost a quicker trigger on people like that, because I go, some people may not know the right language to say or the right terms to say, but you know all that shit,
mm-hmm.
and you just dropped some racist shit or some bigoted shit.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you have no excuse. So those are the people that I can sometimes rule out quicker.
Oh, definitely. I've had that happen in the office before, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, and even when I was talking to, like, our mutual friend, it wasn't even about Trump. It was just, like, about some dude that I didn't know, but he was relaying a story to me. But, you know, that guy is still his friend.
Yeah.
So it's like you think about that, and it's like, well, okay, all right. And you think about how many other people, like, carry that on. And it's like,
The thing with that is those are friends. Like, at least there's, you know, that's what's so funny about this, and funny meaning sad, with Trump, is that at least somebody says, well, you know, my stepdad's a little racist, or my uncle's this, or my grandfather is that. But you go, all right, I get, like, that's your family, though. Or that's your close friend, that you know them better and kind of look past things. At least there is a rationale, even if it's maybe not perfect. You can at least be like, well, it's not ideal, or maybe this person's so bad they should not be friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of like a stranger or a politician, it's like, oh, you like that.
Yeah.
Like, or you don't think it's a big deal at all. Like,
right.
To me, supporting Trump at this point, I don't know. It's sort of a to a lot of people, it's beating a dead horse. It's annoying. It's boring at this point to keep talking about. But he keeps doing things. Any one or two of his blemishes on his presidency would be monumental scandals. But he's got like 30 of them.
Right.
So it's more like we're all in sort of shock, and like the body is shut, like the political body is shutting down because it can't actually absorb the impact of all the absurd, crazy, immoral, corrupt things he's doing. But, you know.
Well, it's almost like you even joked about it on your latest episode where you said, you know, basically, you know, if you're still a Trump supporter, then you're probably racist. And anybody you know, basically, I'm paraphrasing what you said,
mm-hmm.
but you're basically saying like, oh, and my grandfather might have said certain things. No, but he's a good guy. No, he's racist. He was
yeah.
racist.
And I always think to myself, I'm like I said, I've heard racist things in my own family.
Yeah.
But ain't nobody in my family voting for Trump.
Right.
So I'm at the same time, I'm like, I remember my mom said to me in the 2016 after Hillary lost, which to her, you know, was basically the equivalent of me seeing, you know, Jack Black, Karl Malone, Bryan Cranston, you know, and John Stockton die in a train wreck. Like she, I remember when Trump won, she just looked at me and said, I'm just glad none of my sons will ever be called white working class. Now that's a woman who comes from white working
sure,
class, but you
yeah.
obviously know what she means.
She understands that she's talking about the connotation that it brings.
Right.
Up.
And
yeah.
I, you know, it's, at this point, and I have said to people, which is sometimes, I guess, a distinction without a difference to some people, but I go, if you voted for Trump in 2016, in the aggregate, I can shit on that group. But
yeah.
I don't know every individual's life.
Right.
I don't know if your factory in your town shut down. I don't know if something happened with Democrats specifically to your life, or if Hillary Clinton supported something that was specific so specific to you
mm-hmm.
that it was, it's like when Chris Rock said the parameters where a white person could say the N-word. It was obviously a big joke where it was like, if you get robbed, beat up, urinated on, you know, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera, you can say it. Like to me, I can't rule out, I can't individually call on all 62 million people that voted for Trump in 2016. But the 60 million that support him on January 7th, 2020,
mm-hmm.
I have no problem sort of considering you the deplorable
right.
that Hillary Clinton labeled you as.
And what's fascinating to me and kind of and at the same time insidious is the fact that even though New York and New Jersey were blue, it's still like I've said this hundreds of times on the show. I still saw those Trump signs. Like when I work in Westchester and I drive through Rockland County a lot of times to go home. Like if you don't go the Garden State Parkway, you can take like 9W and 303 and you see these like neighborhoods and stuff that lead you into Bergen County. And I see these Trump signs and I still see them. And it's like, it's not that far away. And as much as we can consider the New York metropolitan area to be very liberal, and a lot of people will say that we're in our bubble and everything like that, and everything's an echo chamber. It's there, dude. Like, it's around us at all times, and it's in our face, whether we want to admit it or not. And it's still there. It's there, dude. You know?
Yeah. It's and I think at this point, Donald Trump, like, it has very little to do with for the in our region.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for the southern hypocritical evangelicals, it has all to do with judges and abortion, and he's
mm-hmm.
an ends to a mean. Though I still think the coalition that Reagan put together of hypocritical evangelicals and business people. I still think the current, and this isn't sort of novel thinking, but the current still running through so much of that is race. And I know everybody's like, oh, you think everybody's... The just like racism is baked into the recipe of America, it is baked into the modern Republican Party. It just is. Like, that's you. Maybe your granddad or aunt aren't specifically racist, but the Republican Party, as it's constituted today, and as it's been put together since basically they got crushed by Lyndon Johnson in 64, has been a race has played such an important role throughout, whether it be Southern Christians or the wealthy who are, you know, or just bigots, it's baked in. It's not like a third, an even third, where it's like you have the religious, the wealthy, and the bigots. The bigotry may be stronger and more prevalent in some slices of the Republican Party, but at this point, it's mixed into the DNA.
Right.
Maybe it's not a dominant trait of some people, but it's just it's baked in. This modern Republican Party started with Nixon and states' rights and the silent majority and law and order,
right?
And it's never stopped doing that. You know, talking about welfare queens or Willie Horton or, you know, and Trump just kind of brought in the immigrant angle to it.
Let me ask you that. Or continue, continue.
No, no, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's, people can deny it. They can say, well, I'm not a bigot, so therefore X, Y, and Z shouldn't be considered. But it's like, it's in the DNA. And I'm sure there's, like I said, it's in America, so it's not like the Democratic Party is so holy. But this modern Republican Party is like its baptism was the, you know, antagonism towards the civil rights movement.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like you can talk about it in all sorts of different ways, but it's, you know, it's largely hypocritical Christians, rich white dudes, and bigots that are sort of comprising the real force behind Trump and the modern Republican Party.
I think that's very true. I appreciate that insight. And I want you to go a little further with regards to, especially because you're a native New Yorker, what the fuck is going on with all these hate crimes against Jewish people? It just seems like there's a resurgence, and there's just been so much every time I wake up. You know, we had the stabbing that happened in Rockland County, which was like, God, that was, you know, that's right up the street from me, tech, basically. It's right by Levity Live. And then we had, like, you know, the shooting in Jersey City. What's going on? Like, defacing property?
Well, as someone who can say that the two most devastating and worst relationships of my life were with Jewish women, I can say I see where they're coming. No, I'm just kidding. No, even my broken heart, even my traumatized love life doesn't understand this. And I don't have data. I don't have any kind of degree in this sort of analysis, but I can't imagine it's coincidental that you have a president who hides behind his Jewish stepson, son-in-law, and his converted daughter, even though it's been reported that, like, when she was going to convert, he didn't like it. He thought it was unnecessary because in his mind, it was like her converting was like a price of doing business to get, like, a marriage of real estate titans. Because Kushner is obviously from another huge real estate New York family.
Right.
But he didn't want her to convert, and that's been a shield. Yeah. But every time he goes in front of Jewish groups, you know, he's like, you don't like me, you want to negotiate, you love your money, Israel, be loyal. Like, he speaks. They're obsessed with Ilhan Omar, who I'm not even defending at this point. I mean, I think she's said some things that were at best sloppy, and that's at best. But he's just as bad with the bully pulpit of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, I do think when he – and I don't know. It's not just white people also. It's like the black Israelites. It's like there is this general antagonism rising, it seems, towards Jewish people, a big rise in hate crimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's two things at work. One is you have a president who, when he said there were fine people on both sides,
right,
I think gave sort of, it was the kind of thing like, I'm not backing you, but I am not going against you either. You know, like, yeah, when a mob boss says, I will stay neutral, that's kind of a sign to, like, go take the territory if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing is, to be frank, I think the Jewish community is, there's no way to, like, say this without sounding offensive. So I maybe shouldn't say, because I don't mean it from any kind of stereotype.
Just to be preemptive, the views of J.L. Covan do not reflect the views of
Chris
Lambert. Sure.
No, but in other words, yeah, when I feel like, it's hard to say, like, media savvy, but I think there is, I'm not saying that anybody's making things up. I think these are real crimes, and there's obviously mm-hmm. data to prove that there's a rise, but I think you have people of means, you have people within the media who can amplify that message.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in some sort of creepy conspiracy. I'm just saying, you know, imagine if black reporters and black editors ran many of the newspapers and media outlets. You might have an even more bigger focus on that. This sounds like, this is one of those things where I'm like, I know this sounds terrible, but I hope people realize I'm not saying it to mean anything nefarious. I'm just saying there is, you know, with success and power comes the ability to amplify and draw and highlight issues that are affecting your community.
Right.
I think that's like the way I mean to say it.
No, I know what you mean. I think the people that generally listen to this show get that.
So what I'm saying is I don't think that there's a manipulation here. I think the data proves that mm-hmm. these kinds of hate crimes are on the rise in a significant way.
It's just fucking weird. I remember doing a show about,
And I also do think, I'm sorry, the one thing I will say is I think because I know there's always this, Jewish people are Jewish, they're not white. They're white not for the purposes of maybe anti-Semites,
mm-hmm.
but in general, mostly, you know, when they apply to college, when they fill out their demographic forms, they'll probably check white. And I think as much as Jews seem to anger some of Trump's base even more than black people, I think at the same time, there's maybe a slightly more sympathetic ear, whereas when there's shootings of black people
right.
by cops, first of all, it's cop on civilian. It's not civilian on civilian. So
right.
the cops generally get that kind of protection of, well, you know, if he had been doing, and I feel like there's maybe a little less sympathy
mm-hmm.
because some of the plight of black people and some of the crimes and discrimination that occur against black people seems to occur throughout our history, whereas the anti-Semitism seems to come in these spasms or like cycles, and we're in a cycle now thanks to a president that's sort of given a pass to this kind of attitude and language and violence that, you know, now we're in sort of a holy shit moment, whereas I feel like black people don't always get the sympathy because it's almost like a constant current. You know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
2012 sucked for black people, just like 2014 did, just like 26, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
you have these highlight incidents, but it's always sort of bad or worse than everybody else. Whereas the Jewish community seems to have gotten from what I read, it just seems to be in a very bad moment. And I think Trump is unquestionably one of the major forces that's creating this or assisting or catalyzing this, you know, sort of uptick.
Yeah, because I mean, it's easy for me to be black. How come when they kill the black people? But it's like, at the same time, when they have those rallies that in support of Jewish people and, you know, protecting and, you know, to raise awareness, there are black folks there too protesting
right.
that, you know, we should, you know, protect everybody. But I just noticed, like, it just seems like it's been within the last 3 to 4 years, I've just noticed. I've just been aware of it. I guess maybe my proximity to being close to Jewish communities. I mean, working in a Jewish community when I was in Chicago and Skokie, but never really experienced. Obviously, that's a much smaller town, but it's at the same time, it's like, well, Jesus, what the fuck is going on? Like,
oh yeah, well, Skokie is famous.
Of course, yeah. So,
yeah, and I'm always sad about is I think there still is that coalition, but it seems more fractured than it was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you read a civil rights book,
yeah,
it's always like this Jewish lawyer and this black preacher got together with this
right.
black medical student and this Jewish activist,
right.
and they formed a coalition and they marched and went to court. And it feels like there was such a strong share. And I think some of that might have to do with, you know, the 60s were a fucking one generation removed from the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like we had gone from that epic tragedy, like monstrosity, but it was fresh. So now in your own country, you see a people victimized, you see a people under attack,
right.
living like a second-class citizenry. And I think that, you know, it was like it was very fresh. And now I feel like maybe, and not to quote Trump, on both sides, but there seems to be a more of a fracturing. That coalition is, while still present, and obviously Jewish people tend to vote Democratic, as obviously do black people,
mm-hmm.
but I don't feel, maybe, I don't know, it doesn't feel quite as lockstep as maybe it used to be.
Maybe so,
but
yeah.
That I could be wrong. That could just be a feeling, and maybe the facts don't support that. But
yeah,
I feel like anything's on the table with Trump in office. You can find any excuse
mm-hmm.
you can. Just like when I'm disappointed when I see, you know, it's like 3% of black women support Trump, but then you see like 15% of black men, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like
which is still obviously a tiny number.
Yeah,
but you're like 15%. That's
pretty
obscene.
Big. Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's like once you accrue. It's like I just keep thinking of like my, you know, you read in one fucking Ta-Nehisi Coates book, as much as I love him, and you read his essays, like it's just them. It's just that pursuit of whiteness. So to when you achieve something, you think that everything's gonna be okay if you achieve this a certain amount of success, a certain
right.
amount of income. That all the other stuff that made them hate you is gonna go away because you have
right.
these things that you have achieved, but it's not, you know. And then that's another mind fuck because you think like, well, why? Well, I tuck my shirt in every day and I do this and I talk this way and still you guys still hate me. But I
yep.
think black men. And white women, I think collectively, not like all of us, but it's just like we think that we can change stuff to a certain degree where we don't have to. I don't know. I just think like black women get left behind in a lot of this shit. And you just kind of have to be. And, you know, I would just be remiss if I didn't just at least say something about that. Like, you know, where it's just like they kind of get left behind and
mm-hmm.
black men collectively are just like. Well, if I achieve all this shit, then I'm successful and I'm going to take care of my own and I'm going to be okay. But
right.
I don't give a fuck about everybody else. I'm going to be okay. And that's a lot of what America is anyway. It's like I think the two of the most interesting movies this year, Knives Out, it's a crowd pleaser, but it's definitely about the pursuit of whiteness and the maintenance of it as well.
Right.
And it's more blatant because that main character is a person of, God, I don't remember where she's from, but she's from,
Well, they make a point of making fun of where,
right.
like, they get it wrong. So they mention, like, four different countries.
Exactly.
Like, I want to say Ecuador, but I can't remember if she was from Ecuador or if that was just one of the mistakes.
And I think it is Ecuador. And then this
Honduras, Guatemala, like, they, yeah. like, everybody in the family mentions a different Central American country.
Right. And she's a person of Latin descent. And then the movie Ready or Not, which kind of came and went, but it's kind of... It seems like that's going to be more of a cult hit because...
Who was in Ready or Not?
Ready or Not, Samira... What's her name? Samira Weaving or something like that? I can look it up. Ready or Not. She's the one that got that... She's the white woman that got the other white woman fired from Smilf.
From where?
You know that Showtime show, Smilf, with the girl?
Oh, yeah. I don't watch it, but I've heard of it.
Samira Weaving. She plays this woman. She marries into this family, and the tradition is for the bride to participate in a game, and the game is like hide and seek. And if they
ready or not, and they like murder everybody.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, because that.
Yeah.
Some good. I saw like multiple previews for that.
Yeah, it's good.
Come and go.
It's like I put, you know, you put that koofy on when I every time I feel like I'm talking about it. I feel like you could see me put my koofy on and be like Damon Wayans from that prisoner character from In Living Color. See,
right,
the white
right.
man is like, but it's true. It's true. Like, I was talking to a friend about it who's a culture critic and everything, and we were talking. She's like, no, that's not far off. But I just kind of have to preface it with that because right. I don't think that was the filmmaker's intent. It was just to be like this fun movie where you marry into this weird-ass family and they try to kill you. And then there's like a slightly supernatural element, but that's what it's like. And it's like, wow, the two of the movies that had a really big impact were those for me this past year. Yeah, it's just kind of been a thing. Like, we got to keep this thing going. So no matter what, I'm going to fucking kill you. And you know, so I can maintain my lifestyle.
Yeah.
Before we, and damn, we've talked for a half hour, but that's what we do on this fucking show. I know we hung out, when did we hang out? Before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think it was before Thanksgiving. Went to the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
In New Jersey. And, yeah, we're due for a January meetup.
I gotta take you to,
that other place.
Kinchley's Tavern. I gotta take you there. Even though I'm doing my, I'm giving up McDonald's. I'm gonna try to be like Bill Burr with giving up like alcohol for a whole year. I've already given up French fries, and I'm just gonna just see what that does, see what life is like without that shit. But every now and then I will indulge in something. But Kinchley's, I'll have to take you there. That's another place where I always talk about on the show where I like it. And it's a good place, but that's sometimes you can walk in there being like a black person, and the staff there is friendly as fuck. I even kind of got recognized there a couple times, and they know me as a comedian and shit. So, like, one guy saw me in Pennsylvania. One of the guys working there saw me. Like, I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I was like, "Wow, that's crazy." And he saw me.
Are you Netflix's Chris Lambert?
No, I don't think he knows that. I don't think he knows that. But like, but that's a place where we talk about, like, you know, being how things aren't that, how things could be, how people could probably be racist over there. People can be racist anywhere, but that place, Ramsey, New Jersey, is 15 minutes north of me, and it could almost be like another world to some degree. The clientele could look at you like, "Why are you in here?" You know,
record scratch.
Yeah. So, but how are you liking it so far?
I like the space. I like our place. I don't mind the commute. Because, you know, it just gives me an hour to read each day.
Yeah.
But I don't like living, you know, I don't like living my life as it, like, I would rather have to take the subway an hour than have to like abide by a commuter train schedule,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Like when the subway's always running, so So you just go down there. You catch. So even if you have a long train ride, it's like you don't have to adjust your life to like, I got to get the 9:10 else I'm done till the 10:20. And then you end up just feeling like you're wasting some of your life every day, just kind of trying to time your life to train schedules. But other than that, it's pretty good. I can't lie. Like I miss my, this is like the sad part of the show, I guess, but I miss my neighborhood because I basically went from my parents' place to, you know, college and law school, but then you're really still kind of living at home.
Sure.
You know, when you're not at school, you're home again.
Yeah.
And then moved in with one of the aforementioned tribeswomen. and that was as life-altering a disaster of a relationship as one can really have.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved into my place on 51st Street. I guess now I can give the address now that I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I was there for almost 12 years.
Right.
And it's like that's like from the neighborhood to the dorm end, everything in between, you start to realize living in a place from the age of 27, 28 till you're 40 is like you, that's the time of your life where you start to not, I don't even mean lose friends. Like we're not friends anymore. Although that did happen with a couple people.
Sure.
That was the other mentioned relationship with the tribes, with a different tribeswoman.
Yes.
But, no, but basically it's like, oh, your friends move to other states. They have family, so you keep in touch. But it's not, you lose some of that. So the familiarity of my neighborhood, of the people who work in my neighborhood, of the people in my building, became like its own friendship in a way.
Right.
Its own kind of, because you're just, you see, you know, I saw my doorman, my afternoon doorman, way more than I saw my family or my friends. If you just do the aggregate amount of time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then to leave that was like the saddest thing for me.
Yeah.
So, but I do like where I live.
It's nice. I like it. I like where you live. Yeah, it's nice.
But that's been the only thing that's, you know, I don't want to say hard, but just, you know, you look back and go, hey, that time's just over.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it'll be replaced because I'm in like a newer building and you just get the vibe. I was in a building with a lot of people who've been there for a long time. So they have old school manners and interactions, whereas mm-hmm. now it feels like I live in a building with people who range from, you know, 28 to 38 who are all, I live here, I go do my own thing, I go to work, I come back, I shut the door.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's weird, like.
Yeah, people don't fucking
speak
over it.
I'm lamenting a world that probably will never come back.
It's weird, dude. Like, I've lived in my place for going on 13 years, and the way people interact, it's just weird. It's fucking weird. Like, I was leaving my apartment. It was like maybe 5:45 in the morning, leaving to go to work, and this woman comes down the stairs, and she's like she's afraid of me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not hurting you. I'm just going out to work like you are. And she's like, oh, no, I didn't mean. I was like, yeah, right. You know, just fucking weird. I did have a hoodie on, so it was my fault. So. But you joke all the time that you're away, you're farther away from your dreams.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's without question.
But
I mean, the dream, I sort of have to think, the only thing I'm working on right now, I am working on a couple things for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's tough. I feel like, you know, I feel like Carmelo Anthony at this point.
Wow.
Just trying to drop some buckets with the Trailblazers, but there's no relevance to what I'm doing. My team won't make the playoffs. I'm going to retire any day now.
You don't think they'll make the playoffs?
Portland or me?
Portland?
No. Well, right now they're like 10th in the West.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So the only things that I have that I am optimistic on, but at this point my optimism when it comes to any artistic endeavors is, can I do a good job? Not will it sell, will it make me a success, but can I do this well? So the script series idea that I'm working on, mm-hmm. and I've already sort of mapped out 6 episodes, though I don't think I have the patience to wait until I've written all 6 and present them as like a season 1 package.
Okay.
I'm optimistic about it because it's something I know very well. It's something that I have been able to make people laugh when I go through it and describe it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not, I'm talking like scene by scene, not just the overarching idea.
Is there a part for me in it?
Sure. I mean, I'm gonna, how fast you said it.
Sure.
I'm going to do what Seinfeld did. He got his boy Larry Miller all the way to the final audition, but he lost it to a man named Jason Alexander, who then won multiple Emmys playing George. So the best I can offer you is I'm going to get you in the room.
Okay.
And but then at some point, if your boy from Yale, Brian Tyree Henry.
Fuck, man. Come on, dude.
If he comes in and blows it out of the water,
yeah.
I'll be like, Chris, how does a recurring guest role sound?
I would not be mad at that. Larry Miller has a good career. He played,
right. There would be auditions.
Yeah, sure.
For people who I know well, who I think could do the part. So,
dude, I was talking on Twitter how Awkwafina, current Golden Globe winner,
was a
guest on the podcast. And I auditioned for her show and did not book it.
Wow.
You know, but she doesn't, I don't think she's in the room to cast somebody that's like.
And that's the problem. Not enough women making decisions, even though every casting agent is a woman.
Well, actually today I had an audition for, it was dudes.
What?
Yeah, it was white men. It was a white guy.
But it is almost always women, right?
For the most part it is.
Every time I look on a show and movie, it's always like cast. But casting, and it's like two women's names.
For the most part, from my experience, at least in New York, it's been women.
Well, you know what? That disappoints me because I think at this point, it's 2020. It'd be nice to have some men in the role of decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that you finally maybe saw some representation with male casting agents.
Yeah. So they like it's been a tough nut to crack with like Comedy Central. And I think they listen to our podcast probably, and they won't, and they don't book me, or they book like their friends. And I don't know, dude. I'm not even going to say it, you know, it is what it is. Like I like this, the thing that I auditioned for today, if I were to get it, I would be opposite a New York comedian. That's the star on a TV show. That's
right.
You know, it would be like if he saw me, he would be like, oh, hey, man. It wouldn't, like, we're not BFFs. We'd be like, hey, dude, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, I think you, like, living here, it's sometimes the commute is just the same. Or, like, when I'm coming from work, it's, like, 45 minutes to an hour to get in. And, like, my thing this year, I'm hoping to do more shows in the city. And kind of reacclimate myself. So I've been trying to get more like bar shows and stuff like that, and trying to get up more and remember why I actually do like stand up. I said on the last episode, I was like, yeah, oh God, I hadn't done stand up in a month, had a death in the family, and was just.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I was just out for a while, and that and not being booked, you know, it was like, oh fuck. What is it going to be like when I get up again? And then I got up and did fine. Did well, but like it was just kind of like, oh yeah, I love stand up. This is what's been sustaining me artistically for the past 11 years, you know.
Right.
And so it was good. It's good to get back to that, but I think you can still do it. But one of the things is like, I don't know if you'll ever get a car or not, but that's a game changer too, because I definitely felt like my initial couple years doing stand up in the city was like, I felt like Cinderella trying to make it home to the train, trying to get to the train and adhering to those times. It's just like, I don't want to worry about that. I'd rather just pay.
This climate change warrior has no intention of getting anything other than an electric vehicle if and when the time comes.
Yeah.
But more likely, I'll just be beholden to the train schedule for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, one thing I appreciate about you having you as a friend, or people like you, like it's kind of like you because you're striving to be a better person, and I need that in my life too. But like you've gotten rid of Facebook, you've gotten rid of Instagram.
And as jokey as that sounds, that was difficult.
I know.
Because it without question. I mean, I got the funniest thing about quitting Facebook, and I wrote this down to kind of work on as a stand-up bit, was I got a message from a writer, sort of maybe one-time comedian who's mostly doing writing,
mm-hmm.
contacted me on Twitter about a week after I deleted Facebook, which was, you know, well over a year ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Hey, man, did you block me on Facebook?" And I said, no. I deleted my account. I just don't. And he was like, "Oh, okay. I haven't heard from that person since."
Mm.
And what I find funny about that is that he wasn't even checking. It tells you about our mentality now. He wasn't checking because he had a question or wanted to discuss something with me. The very idea that somebody would have blocked him was kind of, you know, hey, that's like somebody insulting me in this day and age. I need to make sure I wasn't insulted. But he didn't actually have any reason to contact me other than that. And I haven't heard from him since. And I'm not saying we weren't close friends. We met at a few shows. We
yeah.
had a couple chats online.
Right.
But you know what I mean? So it just tells you the approach is like, if you're not on Facebook, to a lot of people, we've been conditioned.
You don't
basically
exist.
Feel irrelevant or non-existent.
Yeah, you're dead.
And,
you might as well be dead, dude.
Right. And what Facebook has done, and Amazon was easy. Like, I remember that's been the easy thing to give up. But, yeah, Facebook, I mean, that's 4,000 less people to look at my content. That's,
yeah.
you know, 100 fewer people that I can get gigs from or that I have
right.
contact or can see what gigs they have to pursue. So that actually was bad, but I just felt like, and I said it on the you know, the first episode of the Righteous Prick remix.
Yeah.
Basically, now I'm down to movie theaters. I feel like every time I keep reading something, I'm like, shit.
I know.
I wish I hadn't read that.
What are you going to do? So you're not even going to go to the Claridge?
Well, the sad thing is, it almost makes me, it's a weird thing. Because I have this aversion, maybe it's the Catholicism in me, where it's like, I don't want to go out preaching on sidewalks and trying to convert people, but I'll try to live my life, go to mass, live my life in a good way. But I don't want to be one of those preachy people. That's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it is with sort of activism. I'm kind of I'll post something and I'll try to make adjustments to my life that comport with my ethics.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this, my thinking was, how can movie theaters be exempt in 2020 from paying like normal service job wages and benefits, like
right.
not paying overtime, not paying holiday pay, under some 1930s law when you needed to have like a special skill set to be a projectionist? Now you're a kid or a middle-aged man pressing buttons in four different theaters. And it makes me want to go to theaters and ask workers, do you get paid extra on holidays? But you don't even want to ask that, because if I ask that and the person says something, and I don't think this is out of bounds to think, is the manager going to be like, oh, you know, well, you know what, I can get somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of people who'll be desperate, plenty of kids who'll be desperate for a part-time job, plenty of struggling adults who will take this job. But to me, it's like, how is this not, somebody's got to do something. And as somebody who goes to the movies a lot, I feel sort of guilty about it, and it fucked with me, because I was just like, ah, you know, we live in this tough economy, and if I believe that things need to be sacrificed or people need to make changes, how can I not to, you know, see, people will post a meme, be the, you know, hey, Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. But does anybody actually fucking do that?
No.
And in my head, I'm like, well, this is, And it's only half the equation. Is like, oh, what if I just quit my AMC thing, don't go to the movies until it changes, but then that might motivate me to investigate more and to write letters to people. And then just like Kaepernick, if Kaepernick had been signed by an NFL team, I would be back watching the NFL. To some people, that might be an arbitrary distinction, but it wasn't to me because I felt like the entire league colluded against him. It wasn't one owner deciding that his behavior was or was not acceptable. It was the entire league basically saying, fuck this dude. Do we all agree? Agreed.
Yeah. I just,
and that's why it was problematic for me. But with movies, it's like, I just think this should be changed.
Now,
and even if states like New Jersey or New York, you know, and maybe this is just me trying to find new ways to be unhappy, but New Jersey, New York New York and New Jersey are liberal states.
Yeah, yeah.
So they may have laws that say, oh, no, you, like I know for a fact in some of my just internet research, California has a law, as they would. Like they're always sort of on the forefront of progressive causes. They have a law that basically says, no, fuck the federal law. We're overriding that and saying you've got to pay your people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, New York and New Jersey very well might have laws like that that require overtime pay if you reach it, might require holiday, you know, extra pay on holidays. But that doesn't stop the fact that there might be 30 or 40 states where AMC Theaters is giving the shaft to their workers. And these are not workers making $100,000 with benefits.
Yeah.
These are people, if they're not kids, if they are working adults who need every fucking dime they make. So they're not even in a position to fight for something or to maybe quit their job in protest and look for a new job. Because if they're living check to check, then they don't have a check to give up. They can't wait one check for their rights or for improved benefits. You know what I mean? So it's like, as I think about this stuff, I go, is there really a big deal in giving up movies? Maybe for a little bit?
For you, it would be.
No, but I'm saying,
for me, it would be.
Yeah, but I still have Netflix, and I can write more, and it frees up maybe a few hours here and there for other things. But if I really care, the next step is to use that extra time that I'm not going to a dine-in theater or to an AMC in Manhattan to research and to write a letter or to write my congressperson. First, I need to figure out who the fuck my congressperson is here, but then write them a letter and be like, can we get something done on this?
Yeah, because I was thinking of you on Friday when I went to Kips Bay.
Fuck it. I'm just breaking news on the Monday Night Festival. I am going to write some letters this weekend.
All right. That's good. That's
when my
good.
I may see Little Women with my final AMC Stubbs movie, because if anything will make me okay with not going to the movies for a while, it'll be an empowering, boring story written and directed by a woman featuring women.
It's good. You know, because I like
Greta Gerwig. You're part of the Gerwig hive.
I'm Gerwig hive, but I'm not a period piece hive. So
right.
I was just like, fuck, I don't want to see this shit. And I went to see it. I was like, okay, let me see it, because I haven't been. I want to go to the movies. And, you know, and I was pleasantly surprised. I think Saoirse Ronan is a generational great. Like, I'm at the point with her where I'll watch her in anything.
Wow.
She is, man. Like, because she's really good. There's like this shot. There's this real. And Greta Gerwig knows how to make a fucking movie, man. She might be better than her partner. I don't know. She might be.
Her partner, Baumbach?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't know, Young. She
man,
might.
If he beats her at the Oscars, though, that's a big win for men's rights.
Well, yeah, it is. But see, he did a Netflix movie, and you know how the Academy feels about Netflix movies. Hers is studio.
No, I know, and it's been legitimately successful. Not like just like indie A24 successful, but like you know, closing in on like 75 mil.
That's like white women Avengers to like. Like Frances Pugh, who's a rising star, she's like 23. Emma Watson, you know, she was good, but like, you know, she's more of a supporting character. But it's really, the focus is on like Ronan and Pugh's characters. So I don't know if you saw Midsommar, but
Oh, is that her in that movie?
Yeah, that's her.
Isn't she in a ton of movies? Oh, was that her in Fighting With My Family?
Yeah, I need to see that. Was that good?
I enjoyed it.
Why is it so expensive on demand?
Is it not for rent yet? Maybe that's just to purchase?
I think it should be, because did it come out this year? I don't.
Yeah, like February.
Yeah, so it shouldn't be $10. It should be like,
oh yeah,
shit should be on cable somewhere. But
I really liked that movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was, well, I think Stephen Merchant is like super sort of underused by Hollywood, because
I like Hello Ladies.
Hello Ladies was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I rarely get like when shows get canceled, I'm like, man, that sucks. But that was right there with The Grinder as a show where I was like,
oh, The Grinder was great.
The Grinder was great.
Yeah.
I was so mad when they canceled that. And Hello Ladies, I was like, that was a brilliant, funny, touching first season. And then at least they got like a nice movie to wrap it up.
Yeah.
But, man, I would have loved for that to have gone on like several seasons. And it's the best work that Kyle Mooney has done of SNL. He played like his kind of bizarre, like, assistant.
Okay. Yeah.
He was great. He was like, legit. Like, I was actually excited when I saw him coming on Saturday Night Live, because I was like, that's the dude from Hello Ladies.
Did you see Brigsby Bear?
No.
Yeah, you wouldn't see that. Yeah, so I think that's something to think about, because that's like my, like you said on your show this week, you sort of, it's your sanctuary. And that's how I feel, dude. Like, the week can be rough. You can be working all week, doing shows, or just bombarded with stuff. You go to the movies. I like to go to the movies. I like to get a smart water and maybe some M&Ms and just relax, dude.
Yeah.
And you think about these kids, because they are kids working there. And it's like, well, are these people being taken care of? But then you think like, well, when I was young, I had a shit job. You know, I worked at Sears, or I worked, yeah, did like, you know, these kind of jobs. But when you work retail, and I've been on the end of that, like Christmas, like Black Friday and shit like that, man, it's hard when you're not getting paid.
And it's easy to think of just the kids working that job, but we are now in an economy where most of the jobs being created are the low-end jobs,
mm-hmm,
which is why it's more important than ever that the minimum wage get up. But also, it's like, it shouldn't be a crime. Like, people, this always annoyed me, this argument about, like, you know, raising the minimum wage to 15, even though it should be even higher at this point based on sort of cost of living and inflation.
Yeah.
But 15 is like where it should be at a literally at a minimum right now.
And right.
You know, everybody's like, by 2024, we'll be up to 15. Well, by then it should be like 18.50.
And then what pissed me off about that was people that don't work those jobs were getting mad because somebody at McDonald's was getting paid $15. Well,
right,
if you go to McDonald's, you want the person making your food to be fucking happy about what they're making, or happy about their job at least. So,
well, and the thing is, I was talking to my girlfriend about this a couple weeks ago. I said, if you make 15 an hour and you have a 40-hour work, like if you're lucky enough to get a 40-hour work week,
mm-hmm,
if you live in New York or San Francisco, you are poor.
Right. San Francisco is more expensive than New York, right?
It is now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're poor. You're not like, hey, man, I'm making it. Now, if you live in, you know, Toledo, Ohio, and you're making that, and you have like a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend who's working the same kind of job, and you can pool that together, you might have like a sustainable life. It won't be like a great life, but it would be like you can make your rent and like go on, you know, two dates a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what you're looking at. If that's,
yeah,
if you're in like making that money in a small, humble city.
Right.
But what I hate, and one of the things, Adam Carolla, my former podcasting hero,
sure,
had said, he would often use the argument that McDonald's isn't supposed to be like a permanent job. Because the argument for conservatives a lot of the time, it, mm-hmm, always shifts,
yeah,
from you've got to get a job.
Right.
But then you get a job and it's like, Well, you're not supposed to have that job forever.
Right.
Well, motherfucker, what if I do? What if I'm not smart enough, educated enough, or haven't had the opportunity? But I am willing to get out of bed 5 days a week and do a shitty fast food job for 40 hours.
Right.
Why can't I? Who are you? Are you, you know, the same libertarians that will cry for legalized prostitution will be the same people decrying what job choice somebody makes. And if that's what they, you know, that certain only certain jobs are worthy of long-term employment.
Yeah.
And to me, it ignores the realities of this economy, which is that's where the jobs are getting created. So you've got to sustain them more.
Right.
And they have to be more permanent, or at least able to sustain some basic standard of living, which they don't.
Right.
So it's like you can have the, you've got to work. Well, then you can't flip it a year later and go, well, you're not supposed to have this kind of, hey, you're doing work. What minimum wage should be? What value do we place on an hour of somebody's time who's willing to use it to serve or create or do something for other? What's the minimum? And if you think $7.25, which is still, I believe, what the federal minimum wage is, it has not increased in 10 years. Who can, like, $7.25 an hour? Sounds criminal.
It is.
Oh my God! And my dog, I guess my impassioned
Bernie is 7.25.
Speech. My dog just ripped a huge fart. Damn, Cookie.
Yeah, it is seven. That's fucking. Ooh. That's fucking crazy, dude.
Right now, a lot of places go beyond that, but there are, like, I feel like it's like 20 states or something don't. In 2020, who, like, that's insane. That's insane. And I don't get it. I don't get, like, so I don't know. This was
you're speaking to some real shit. Because
but the movie theater thing, that's going to be a personal, it's not going to be a sacrifice like going to war, obviously, but it'll be an enjoyment.
But it's
sacrifice.
Something that you enjoy, man. Life is hard. I want to tell you something before. I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but in 2016, I talked about being in a car accident. My Hyundai Sonata got totaled. It wasn't my fault. And I was worried about money and stuff, and I decided to get a part-time job.
Walmart truck to hit you like Tracy Morgan.
Oh shit, dude! That SNL shit was funny that they did, but I got a job at this place around the corner from me, Total Wine and More, which is a wine liquor store warehouse, and I did one day there. I think I might have gotten paid. I think it might have been 11 or 12 an hour. That was some of the hardest work that I had ever done in a long time since I unloaded trucks at Walmart.
Uh-huh.
Dude, I did one day.
Wow.
I was like, this is too, I can't do this. I was like, I can't do this. And thankfully, I started getting acting work. But even my parents were like, well, what are you going to do about comedy? Like, even they were like, well, you gotta do, that's taking away time from your stand-up. In your auditions. But I was like, well, I gotta try to make some kind of money, and there's people that fucking need those jobs.
Yes.
You know, so people, I don't know what it is, man. People don't have, it's, I've said this before, it's just it's less eloquently than you've said, but it's just people there's a lack of empathy for people. And
yes,
I think,
and everybody, like, I love this idea. You know, I hate to go back to Carolla, but this is why I think it's important to some. I couldn't deal with Carolla's fans anymore, and his show got, like, too alt-right adjacent for me. And I still don't have any bad feelings about him personally.
Sure.
But it became not as fun, and certainly not a community that was representative of sort of the mixed bag that it was when I first started listening, where he had that. Yeah, he leans a little conservative, but there are plenty of non-conservatives who enjoy him because he's quick-witted and he seems like a good dude in his, like, personal life.
Right.
But he, you know, he had this thing with Terry Crews. He had Terry Crews on.
Okay.
And Terry Crews is, like, a very, like, on the show, it was always, like, very upbeat, positive. You know, like, hey, when I got cut from the NFL, like, I did paintings.
Right.
And I made money through my painting. I would offer to paint teammates, like, portraits and stuff. So he had his hustle and his side gig kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing to hear. But he also was an NFL dude, fairly good looking, sculpted like he was made out of like some sort of superhero factory.
Yeah.
So the same shit doesn't quite apply.
Right.
The lessons apply, but it's the same problem I have. I can always tie this into comedy. When I hear comics, like, I mean, there's this one guy, Andrew Schultz, who's very big right now.
Right.
Very popular, hardworking guy, seems to be a talented guy. But he's also preaching this gospel that, like, the middlemen are no longer necessary.
He was on Guy Code.
The content, like, Netflix and Amazon aren't the future. It's about putting out your own thing, making your own way. And I go, I guess that sounds good, but you had, like, Gersh representing you. You were on MTV. You were on an Amazon. You had some scenes in an Amazon show. You built up you're on a podcast with one of the biggest radio hosts in the country. So, like, you may be doing it, quote unquote, all on your own now, but the platform that allowed you to be successful was built by a lot of the shit you pretend other people don't need. Mm-hmm. And I would never give, like, a young comic that message. I would give them the message, work hard. Don't be like me. Comedy is not a fucking individual sport. Mm-hmm. It's not tennis. You're not out there playing by yourself.
It's stock like car cycling. Racing.
Exactly. It's race car racing or it's cycling, where you may be your individual, but you need a team and you need a framework. You still do the work, but you need help and you need assistance and you need other things to happen. It's up to you to work hard and seize opportunities. But I'm not going to tell you that you just go out there and do you.
Right.
And you don't need any of that bullshit. Everybody needs that bullshit.
Yeah.
It's just some people forget, you know, like the guy, like the son of a millionaire who builds a $1 million company and then says, I built this on my own, man. Nobody helped me. It's like, no, you built it and you deserve credit for that.
Yeah.
But don't tell a myth. Everybody wants to be, you know, Horatio Alger story. They always want to mythologize their own upbringing, where it's like, I was, you know, Kevin Hart does it. The biggest example of them all. He always tells these stories about Hollywood telling him no.
He was in the system for a long time.
Motherfucker was the star of Soul Plane. I know it sounds like a joke, but I think a starring role in a movie released in like 1,200 theaters.
Right, right.
Right now. He was in that when he was 26. He was the star of a major motion picture.
Yeah.
So I don't know who the fuck, what his definition of no is. He was headlining clubs. What was his income? Only $850,000 that year?
Yeah.
Like, that's not being told no. But to most people, they hear that go, well, I didn't know who Kevin Hart was till 2012.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, he just grinded. No, he was still and once again, this is not about disparaging work ethic.
Right. It doesn't mean that he didn't work hard, but it's just he had help.
You don't have to mythologize. It's very popular now. And I, as somebody who has struggled and really actually tried to do this shit on their own, I do resent that personally. But nobody gives a shit. But
no, I get it, dude. I totally understand.
But if you work, like if the bottom line is, if you work hard, and you know what? Fuck it. If you work, if you get your ass to work every day, and you do a job, especially a job that people don't want, and that's the job that's available to you or people in your community, then we got to do better by you. Because, that was what I was saying. Like with the Terry Crews example, it's this idea of like, we can't be a world exclusively of Terry Crews's and Elon Musk's. Because who will make Terry Crews his protein shake? Who will put together Elon Musk's? No, you know what? Not even put together the car. Who will clean the bathrooms at Elon Musk's factory?
Yeah.
Not Elon Musk. So if you need, there's always going to be a need for people who do the dirty work.
Yeah.
And to treat them like shit or to demand that they work and then demean the work that they do doesn't work. That can't be.
Right. You can't do that. Like, it's like, well, now
that's
I see
for a bumper sticker.
I see.
Demand, you can't demand their work, but then demean the work they do.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean,
and too many people do that.
Have you seen the commercial in the morning, when you're watching the news? Like, the maybe it's not always in the morning, but It's I think it's a Volkswagen commercial, and it's about the people that work in the factory, but it's American people. And they start, it's like, this is what I do when I work. And it's like you normally see, like you think normally Volkswagen, foreign car, but now they start to show like this is an American product.
Right.
You know,
like for some people, I guess it's the idea of a lot of these cars, you know, just like American cars can be put together in other countries.
Right.
You know, we have auto workers. It's not always just a GM or Ford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's move on from the heavy stuff and talk about, and this was fucking great. Like, I always love talking to you and shooting the shit this way with you. It brings
as long as they can get through me fumbling through things that sound anti-Semitic but aren't.
Well, I hope they did. Well, they should know you by now. They should know your heart by now, bro.
Well, but if they also know how angry I was after those relationships, they might be like, you know what? I could see J.O. just going alt-right after those two chicks.
They have to listen to Diamond Maker. But what
Diamond Maker is the first one, and then Rain Chick off of Thoughts and Prayers.
Yeah.
So there, that'll explain everything, everybody. Go stream Diamond Maker and then stream Thoughts and Prayers, and you'll know.
Well, I got to ask you this. We're going to lead into the Golden Globes, but I got to ask you, what are you going to do on July 17th when Tenet comes out? Your boy. That's your boy.
Well, it's tough because I love Christopher Nolan. He's right there with – he's probably my number two.
Who's your number
after
one?
After David Fincher currently, like current directors, because I have had – Christopher Nolan has hit the highest of highs for me.
Did I tell you I did ADR with Christopher – with David Fincher?
ADR?
So, like, when
– I think you did, because I think I've mentioned Fincher, but what does ADR stand for?
It's like additional, like, dialogue recording or something.
He was on, was that with Mindhunter?
Yeah, he's the EP of Mindhunter, right. And he was in via Skype. I did at this studio in the city, and it was really fucking cool. Like he was at the shoot in Pittsburgh, but he was like in LA at some, I don't know where he was, but he was like, yeah, Chris, you know, just want to add a line. The performance was good. Just want to add a line here and just say, you know, can you just do it like this? And it took like 5 minutes and he was just like, that was great. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Oh shit. That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I think Nolan with Inception and with obviously the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah.
Hit tremendous highs. Like things that are, you know,
yeah,
they are on my Blu-ray shelf. They are, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers. But Fincher's whole career, I feel like there have been some movies by Nolan that I've been disappointed in.
Interstellar
and Dunkirk. I know Dunkirk, like some people.
I thought you liked Dunkirk.
Masterpiece. Meh. I found it unnecessarily Nolan'd.
I got to see it again because I fell asleep.
In terms of his, like, breaking it up in the time frame, I felt like he was putting his signature on it where it maybe wasn't necessary. I'll watch it again, but I just remember I go into Christopher Nolan movies with such high expectations.
Of course.
And sometimes he meets them, sometimes he exceeds them, and then sometimes he doesn't meet them for me. Now but David Fincher to me has made more movies and rarely I always love even just the tone of his movies. Like Gone Girl was not one of my favorite David Fincher movies.
It's good, though. I just rewatched it.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Really,
and yet
good.
I was like, his dark tone, the way he sets the mood, I'm always going to like kind of, just like Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
A bad Tarantino movie is like still enjoyable and pretty well done.
Do you think he's made, what's bad, a bad one to you?
Of who?
Of Tarantino.
Oh, and bad is a relative term.
Okay.
But I think the two that would have to be at the bottom of anybody's list who's not trying to make a point, Jackie Brown.
Ah, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I rewatched that. And
I rewatched and I was fine with it, but I'm saying on a relative scale, Hateful Eight is like too much. And Jackie Brown to me was just, it's coming off of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. And it's just, it's not to that level for me.
Oh, I love Jackie Brown. I think that's in my top five. I think about Now you got me thinking about what did you just say? You said Jackie Brown and what else? You said Jackie Brown and what else?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. Nah, it's Hateful Eight just kind of was like.
But get what I'm saying. I'm still saying
it's good, but it's just like at the bottom tier of his oeuvre.
Yeah, it was very long, and it didn't. And I think that was hurt. He was coming off of Inglourious Basterds and Django, which are both awesome, in my opinion.
Yeah, it just kind of Hateful Eight kind of reminded me of a play. Yeah, it was fine. It was, you know. What else did I want to? I think it was something else you made me think about. I think that's it. Yeah,
but
like
Tenet. Well, I didn't even answer.
So you're gonna? Are you gonna? You're gonna have to see that.
Well, you know what? My movie theater activism will have to be aggressive. But yes, I would love to see that. Maybe I go. I do have. My brother got me a gift card to Cinemark, which is like a fancy theater.
Why is that familiar to me?
It's one of those. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those like dine-in.
I know what you're talking about, but why and, I should be.
But I need to do my research. I need to know.
Oh,
that,
where is that? In Jersey? That's like there's a new one that opened in Watchung that I haven't been to yet. That I've been aiming to go to.
I don't think it's that. He told me. I'll ask him when I actually go to it.
Yeah, yeah. But I've heard of it. I think there's one near the Funny Bone in Connecticut in Hartford.
Ah. But I know that what's their names, like California had to sue them to make them pay. Like in my research, I found out that California sued to make them pay fair wages and, you know, et cetera.
There's no Cinemark close to us, though.
It may not be that close. I think my brother mentioned like the Hillsdale Mall.
Okay.
Is there a Hillsdale Mall, something like that?
Okay.
Anyway, he's all over New Jersey. He's doing all his research. But
yeah.
I mean, of course I want to see it. It looks fucking epic.
It looks like it's going to be insane.
But I'm also concerned because I believe that no member of the cast of Ballers should ever win an Oscar. They keep giving John David Washington all these opportunities to be in Oscar-worthy movies, we could be in trouble.
I got to lose more weight so I can compete with these fuckers.
It's so funny because he sounds exactly what Denzel Washington would sound like if he went to fancy prep schools, which is probably where he went.
Well, I mean, I just think he's fine. You know, it's not he's not. When I think of these young black guys,
yeah.
I don't know who I'm trying to think who I like. Like I think Michael B. Jordan's a star. You know, he's fine in Just Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
There's some young cats that are doing it. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. Like I'll probably see somebody and Lakeith's fine. Kelvin Harrison Jr. who's in Loose and he's in Waves. Like that kid had two of the best performances of the year. Like Waves, he was like the homie Rod, you know, from the Black Guy Who Tips said he was kind of like a bigger Thomas, you know, a native son type role in Waves, but he kind of pulled an Edward Norton turn in Loose, which I think is like a white liberal. When you, Jeff, and I get together, we'll talk about it. But it's like a white liberal horror movie.
Okay. I saw Waves,
mm-hmm.
which I referred to as CrossFit Euphoria.
Is it because of the chick was in it?
Oh, no. Wait. No, I called it CrossFit Fences or Black Euphoria.
You just fucking... Oh, come on.
That's come on, you're going to tell me... That first hour, calling that CrossFit Fences, you don't think it's funny?
It's funny, but I don't know how true it is. I would say
that first hour was just him pushing his son, like yelling at him and doing like just getting all buff. And Sterling K. Brown definitely was getting, like, pumped up before those scenes because he was all swole out.
Yeah.
But, no, I thought it was the girl made it.
She's fucking great. She's, oh, my God.
But it also convinced me that they had seen her in, like, one episode of Euphoria and were like, oh, my God, that's our girl. Because that first hour, to me, felt like an episode of Euphoria.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Taylor Russell, the sister on the second half.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the girlfriend.
Alexa
Demi. In Euphoria.
Yeah. She's good. You can because Euphoria came out first. I totally get it. It makes
sense. And I'm saying that not as an insult because I thought Euphoria shocked me with how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good.
I was just like, let me watch this sensationalist bullshit, and then I was just like, this is so watchable. Mm-hmm. It's so entertaining and dark.
Also,
and
where are the parents?
It felt like it had that same vibe.
Yeah. No, it definitely did because you think about the soundtrack and stuff like that. It to me, like, I was talking to Randolph about this.
Does Waves end? And I know this sounds weird, but I have, like, totally blocked out most of the second half of that movie. I just know she starts dating Lucas Hedges.
She dates Lucas Hedges. She makes up with her father. She has, like, she goes fishing with her dad, and she,
right,
like, talks about how she thought he was the brother was a monster, and she's like, he did a bad thing, but he's not a monster, and she just kind of accepts accepts what happened and just kind of goes on with her life. And
right.
I think I had Tim Hall from the Seattle People's Critic. We discussed it, and I really liked the movie, but there were parts that I thought that could have been cut out where it could just be like, you shouldn't fucking see him anymore. You see him in court, that he's gone, and maybe she talks to her brother at the end.
Right.
But, you know, I'm nitpicking, but I think I was telling Randolph this, like, when I really started to become obsessed with movies and love, like, really, it for me, like, it went from, like, football and basketball cards to film. Like, when I was about 19 years old, that's when I became what people call me, like, a cinephile. But the more you know about something, you really don't know shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna say that I know all these movies, but people know me as a guy that loves movies. So
right,
just being a guy that loves movies, it started when I was 19, and I started watching, like, The Ice Storm, Ang Lee, Happiness, Todd Solondz, American Beauty, Sam Mendes, and seeing these, like, American families, like these suburban families, what's beneath the veneer of these, like, freshly clipped lawns, all these people that have these ostentatious houses and stuff. What is it really like? What's the shit that's really fucked up about this family, of these families? And I wanted to see a black version of that, and I had to wait 20 years to see it. And that's what Waves was for me. It was just kind of like, yeah, this was really fucking good. Like, and nobody really talked about it. And I thought, as much as people love This Is Us, which is a show that I haven't seen, I've seen one episode, I thought that, you know, what's my guy's name?
In
the dad. I can't, oh my God. From This Is Us.
Sterling K.
Brown. Like, I was like, oh, maybe people will see him in this turn as an overbearing dad, but they didn't.
Yeah, I want, who was in The Good Times? You know, they were doing a live version of Good Times. Viola Davis.
James Avery, Andre Brower.
Oh, yeah, Andre Brower. And I just, when I read that, I was
John
like,
Amos and Andre Brower.
I was like, this is going to be some emotionally deep version of Good Times.
No, it was just like a fun, you saw it, did you see
but
it?
The thing is, Andre Brower has done comedy now, mm-hmm. but Viola Davis, to me, I've always said, like, you know who she reminds me of? This will sound weird at first, but Christopher Plummer, who I think is a great actor, just like I think Viola Davis is a great actress.
Uh-huh.
But where I believe them more when they're acting than when they're talking.
I could see that, like, because she's very, like...
He's very, like,
regal.
I was schooled at the academy for... And then when he's acting, it's like, now I'm in the role, and I am being authentic within the role. Just like when she's acting, I think it's very authentic.
Yeah.
And then when she's giving a speech, I always laugh because it is just like with him. It's very regal.
Right, right.
And I'm like, wait a second. This is how you talk when you're not acting?
Yeah, it's like, I know what you mean. I love her. And I think, with that Good Times episode, it was kind of trying to make a point to, like, voting and the elections and all that stuff.
Right.
It was interesting. It's cool. But, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I just think about this stuff, and it's like you kind of wonder, like, people like us, people in our, like, podcasting community that put out this content, we don't really count. And I know you tend to skew way more mainstream than myself or...
Oh, hold on for 1 second. Sorry, okay. You're recording.
It's all good.
Sorry, I let Cookie go for a sprint down our very long hallway.
Oh, okay.
Laura arrived, so I figured I'll let her get a run in.
It's all good. We just...
Yes, I'm back now.
It's just like the people, a lot of the people in our community, and I know you skew to be more like mainstream than most people in our circle, like, but nobody gives a fuck. Like, outside, like, nobody cares what we're watching. It's, you know, the people that listen, they care. But I'm saying, like, most people aren't gonna go see Loose or Waves. They're gonna go see Queen and Slim and wonder why that didn't.
I did like Queen and Slim, though.
I liked a lot about it, but when that kid fucking shot the cop, the black cop,
that was a little much.
I was like, what the fuck? And that took me out of it. I was like, okay. The premise is so fucking good, where it's like Tinder date gone to hell,
right? And, but it's a good. It's when you think that that's somebody's debut film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very impressive. It portends excellence on the horizon. I think it's not going to be perfect, but I think there was a lot of
yeah.
And I think the Daniel. I always want to call him Kaluuya. But he is an excellent actor. He's going to win. I think he's
taking our fucking jobs.
He's going to win an Oscar or two.
He probably will.
Sure.
Yeah, he's terrific. So let's get into the Golden Globes.
Yes, and can I give you, not the people listening to this know the time, but is it possible to be done by 7:30 just for
Of course. Let's get into the Golden Globes. I did not watch. I don't really care too much about award shows, just the outcome of them. I did watch Ricky Gervais's monologue. What did you think of the monologue?
I'm tired of Ricky Gervais because I think he's doing an impression of a comedian.
Okay.
That's what it feels like to me. He's just always with the... He's basically the comic going, yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like he's so very aware of him saying it. It becomes like it's no longer. It's like the shtick is old because he keeps going, "Shut up! Yes, I said you all did." Like it's like, and the comics that love it, you know, like the Doug Stanhopes of the world. You don't think this was great comedy. You just because you're a fringe, mealy-mouthed drool bucket. You like to hear other people shitting on more successful, more famous people because only you get to be authentic because you have drooling fans and sometimes say self-important things and you work in bars. So you are so authentic that you're beyond reproach.
Shots
but
fired.
Ricky Gervais sucked, I thought. I mean, not to say some of the jokes weren't good, but it was such a like, it's like an old, it's almost, he's almost created his own hacky thing where it's like it's your fifth time and you're still doing that. Oh, it's like, wait, oh, wow, what a joke. You said Judi Dench likes to lick her own pussy on national TV. It's not a very funny joke, but I guess if your whole agenda is like, you know, yeah, you know what would make celebrities really mad? If you whipped out your dick and urinated on their date. Would that be owning the celebrity Doug Stanhope? You know what I mean? So it was like, it was one of these things that's like, okay, like you've proved your point that you can make celebrities uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought there were a few good jokes. There were some bad jokes. And then it felt like a third of it was just to say something offensive.
Right.
But I just, I'm sort of annoyed with Ricky Gervais because I really hate, I have made the claim that there is a strain of comedy now, because it's so easy to get the back of the room to now applaud you for being not PC. Like if somebody doesn't, I was on a show a while back with somebody who they weren't having a good set, and their trigger was to go, everybody's too fucking PC. And some people will always now buy that as the excuse.
Or it's like, dude, you're not funny. You're not being funny right now.
Maybe your set sucks right now.
Yeah.
But that's become the popular thing. And I think there are people, like if I write a joke that has some offensive content, it's because that offensive content came out organically. And I felt like this is where the joke should go.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's some people out there who will probably just, they almost reverse engineer their bravery, which is like, what's going to offend? Ooh, the N-word.
Yeah.
The word making jokes about trans people. So you start with the topic. Instead of saying, what organically matters to me? What do I think about? You say, what are the topics that will get me noticed? And let me come up with jokes that are okay, but will really get to the point and possibly offend some and shock some, and then half the crowd will rally to me because they instinctively go, don't be PC.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not laughing, it's because you're PC. It could never be because the joke's mediocre or because it is more offensive than it is funny. It's because PC. Now that's like a shield that mediocre, some really good comics too, but some mediocre comics now, like, it's now their bulletproof vest that protects them from having their actual act examined. And that's what I, like Ricky Gervais, I'm just sort of tired of him at this point. Like this particular Gervais product, the I'm going to go in front of celebrities and make a few jokes, say a few offensive things, but then shield it all as like, I'm just the brave comedian.
Mm-hmm.
So, but other than that, I didn't really have many feelings about it.
Yeah, I saw the Apple joke first, and then I went back. I was like, yeah. But everybody has an iPhone. You probably has an iPhone, too. So everybody's got some shit that was made in a sweatshop. How do you want to do this? Do you want to just do, like, TV, film, or do you want to...
Well, you know my thing. We skip all female categories when doing review recaps.
Wow.
Award recaps, so.
On your show.
No.
On your show.
Yeah, it's true.
So TV, we got best performance by an actor in a television series, Rami Youssef from the TV show Rami on Hulu. Pleasantly surprised. I thought the show was really good. I really liked it.
I haven't watched it. Was it legit?
It's very good. Okay. He beat Barry,
right?
Which was terrific this past season.
Yes.
The Kaminsky Method, I have not seen. I've seen
the Golden Globes love that shit.
They
I
love
think he is, Rami made the joke. He said Egyptians love Michael Douglas. So maybe Michael Douglas is just very, you know, kind of Hollywood royalty. So
yeah,
they like him.
Yeah, I've not seen that. I've seen The Politician, which I enjoyed.
I have not yet.
Ryan Murphy.
His first of like his humongous Netflix deal.
Yeah, like I fucking love the Andrew Cunanan and the Versace. Oh my God! How great was that? And obviously the OJ, but yeah. So The Politician is very good. It's entertaining. I enjoyed that.
Good.
Paul Rudd's show I didn't see. Living with Yourself. I didn't see that. Best performance by an actress in a television series, musical or comedy. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who you went on a mini rant about on your show.
Yeah, unbelievable. I watched Fleabag. I actually made my girlfriend watch Fleabag. Like, she was sort of ready to be out on Fleabag, and I said, all right, well, season one was okay, but it was season two that, like, swept the Emmys. So we got to get to that. It's only six episodes, 25 minutes each. So we got to get to the second season because that's the one that everybody just was like, oh my God, Fleabag. Fuck Fleabag.
I thought it was good. Does she beat better than... I like Dead to Me. I like Kirsten Dunst's show on Becoming a God in Central Florida. Maisel, was that for this year? I haven't seen this year's yet.
Maisel could get its own podcast, to be honest, what they're doing with that show.
Do you like that show?
I it ends pretty well this year.
Don't tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell any of the parts of the show. But to me, the show was its best in season one when it was mostly stand-up, a little bit of Lenny Bruce, and a little bit of her parents.
Right.
A lot of the manager, Alex Borstein,
right,
is the best thing about season three.
Okay.
And I am a huge fan of the guy who plays Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
He won, like, the Emmy for season two, I think, for, like, guest actor.
All right.
In a comedy. But the show has way too fucking much of the parents now.
Yeah, I didn't... Season two kind of...
It gets even worse. Like, there's a lot of parents in season two, and then season three, I'm like... They're almost co-stars at this point. And I talked to a guy I work with who I guess I didn't even know, but he was saying, I guess he's half Jewish. His mom is Jewish.
Okay.
And he was like, it's almost, and he was like, he's not I get offended, blah, blah. But he was like, if I did get offended, their portrayal is borderline offensive. Because it's like, what are we doing? Mitch, what? You've got what? You take something with you. You've got to go. And then the mom's like, oh, my God, they're talking. They're out there talking. What are we doing? We have to go there. Are you going to dress like that? It's like, oh, my God. It's like the alt-right came up with their version of nagging Jewish parents and put it on Amazon. It's unbelievable. Like, if it wasn't, you know, it's really like they are so annoying and like, they're taking away so much time from really good characters.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I know Tony Shalhoub. He's won an Emmy for the show, which is unconscionable. But he's a big star. No, but he's a legitimate Emmy-winning actor.
Yeah.
Tony-winning actor. Mm-hmm. Like, he's done a lot with his career, so he's a name.
Right.
But that...
You got to let him eat.
What are we going... You're wearing that? What are we doing? We have to... We go there. What if they do this? Well, then they do this, and it's not okay. And then we go here, and then she goes to Dukan. This is funny. It's like... Yeah. It's like if you took... The Italian version is like if you took Sebastian Maniscalco on stage and ramped him up times five. That's how stereotypical they're playing it.
I like the like rift between them kind of in the second season, but I kind of was hoping it'd be more about her journey in season three. Like she's going on tour in season three.
I know,
three,
and
right?
season three has some really good stuff.
Okay.
And it's at this point, I'm almost like, just make it five episodes and edit out everything involving the parents.
Okay. I mean, that's good to know. I'm definitely going to watch it because I do.
And I like the way it ended. I was ready to be like, you know what? I think I'm done with Maisel. I gave it three seasons. It seems to be on a downward trajectory. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the ending of season three. Okay. So I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm back.
All right. Best performance by an actor in a television series.
But Fleabag is has to be, I don't know if, even Mad Men, at my most irritated with it, never approached the overratedness. Without saying it's bad, the hype of... I mean, it beat Veep. And just to put it in perspective...
It didn't even get... Like, she didn't even get nominated.
I guess the Golden Globes don't dig it.
It's the Hollywood foreign press, and she's the only fucking foreigner, you know, in the
sure.
So it's like, it's not a surprise that she won.
But she did sweep the Emmys, which was in Julia Louis-Dreyfus's last season on Veep, and Veep was really good.
She's so good, dude.
It was bizarre that they were like writing, directing, you know, they gave everything to Fleabag. Yeah.
It's like maybe they were tired of her winning. Like Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a national treasure. And did you see I know you don't like trailers and you probably won't see this movie, But she's got a movie coming out with Will Ferrell.
I saw the trailer, and what's funny is that 2 days before we saw that trailer, I was telling my girlfriend about, I guess I can just call her Laura. I've referenced her once before already.
Miss Laura.
There's a movie on Hulu that I had heard about a few years ago, and I added it without ever even knowing that the Will Ferrell movie is coming out. It's called Force Majeure.
Okay.
And it's a Swedish movie that I had heard really good things about. I was just like scrolling through Hulu.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I think that's that movie I heard about. Then I read the description. I said, that's it. This Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie, as soon as I saw the preview, I said, I had just mentioned it to Laura 2 days earlier. And I said,
Downhill.
This is a fucking remake of the movie I was just describing to you, which is what it is. It's a remake of the 2014 Swedish movie.
How do you force majeure?
Yeah, force majeure is like in contracts. It's like an act of God sort of thing. So it's about the guy running away from his family during an avalanche.
Got it, yeah.
And then it's a dark, it's labeled as a dark, the original is labeled as a dark comedy.
I pulled it up. Oh my God, dude, when I saw that trailer, like everybody in the theater was laughing.
It's sure.
Like, yeah, it's, holy shit, dude. Yeah, she's a national treasure. She's one of our greats.
She got the Bill Russell set of Emmys.
Yeah, she's a legend.
That's why, though, to me, letting Phoebe Waller-Bridge, or whatever her name is, beat her, like, take the throne head-to-head, I was like, come on, man.
Out of this bunch, it's like, Rachel Brosnahan's won already. Kirsten Dunst, that show's new. Natasha Lyonne, new show, Russian Doll, which I liked. I mean, I'm not as turned off by this as you are.
I quit after three episodes. I quit, and I'll tell you why. Because I was like, "What 1980s New York impression is Natasha Lyonne doing?"
Well,
is that critical to the plot? Just tell me, is that critical to? Do I have to go back and watch it?
I think that's who she. It's a fine show. Like it. It's fine.
So anyway, what are we doing? I'm smoking cigarettes, walking down the street, and I'm like, what's this guy doing? What's over here? Hey. Yeah.
It's fine. Like I was
I'll give her an Emmy for that. She's playing a construction worker from a 1980s comedy.
I was entertained by her. She's doing like the modern era version of Maisel's parent, Midge's parents.
And then we see Russian Doll, and they're like, why do we have Russian dolls? Is this what we're doing? Is this what we're doing with our money? We're getting Russian dolls? Hey, Ma, Dad, I'm just a construction worker, and it's like Groundhog's Day every day.
She's been like that in every movie, though. I did, what's the Slums of Beverly Hills? I think that was my favorite thing of her. American Pie, she was getting a check. It wasn't like she was like an ancillary satellite character, so you know. Not a surprise that Phoebe won. Best performance by an actor in a television series drama, Brian Cox beat out Kit Harington in Game of Thrones, Rami Malek, Tobias Menzies, The Crown, and Billy Porter in Pose. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was very upset that Billy Porter didn't win. I said he won the Emmy, so that's better.
Mm-hmm. Because I haven't seen, and Brian Cox, a fucking foreigner, he won. So it's not.
No, I know that. I think that was just like, we love Succession.
Yeah, I have not seen
which
it.
Which is, of course, a movie written by a Brit, but about America. So I think that's perfect for the Golden Globes.
Okay, let me ask you this: what show should I watch now?
Well, you've seen The Boys, obviously.
Yes. Seen The Mandalorian.
So you haven't seen Succession?
Have
you seen Chernobyl?
No.
Chernobyl. End of story.
Okay. Jesus, that's going to be too much, though, right?
I'm just saying, it's only 5 episodes.
Only 5? Okay. All right.
No, Chernobyl is my number one show. Have you watched Watchmen?
Oh, yeah, I love Watchmen.
Yeah, Watchmen, I can admit when I'm wrong or when I've prejudged, and I'm very glad that it turned around when it did because I was getting
very... So you did like it. Okay, I'm surprised you like something that black.
Well, it was also blue. no, it was, no, I thought, because I, as stubborn as people think I can be, I was frustrated with the first, not the pilot. The pilot was obviously kind of very attention grabbing and interesting, but I was sort of getting bored and going, I hate shows that have to like give you a puzzle and leave you like annoyed week after week, but go, oh, watch what I do. I'm going to bring it all together.
Yeah.
But they really did. So they set up a degree of difficulty. They dug themselves a hole, but they, you know, that made the arc all the more interesting and impressive.
Yeah, it was. But, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say my top three shows in order, personally. Chernobyl, The Boys, Watchmen. That would be top three.
Okay.
Of like 2019 new shows.
You really did like The Boys, huh?
I was. The Boys was. I couldn't believe how much I was enjoying it.
You know,
and just how good it was.
And I enjoyed it too. You know, the girl that got blew up in the first scene, Jess Salguero, she was on the podcast.
God damn.
Yeah, Mundane Festival bump.
There's only one person who's bump proof.
You had success prior to doing this, though. And you never know, man. You never know what can happen. I will still claim you when you blow up. you'll be, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'll still claim you. So it is what it is.
What I liked about The Boys, and I remember Joel Rodriguez had written to me on Twitter, oh, that's the guy from Banshee. The guy who plays, what's his name? The main guy, like the Captain America, like the Laura wouldn't remember. She remembers nothing. But you know who I'm talking about—the main superhero.
Yes.
Don't
yeah.
say. Don't give it away.
I know who you're talking about. I mean, right. People. Most of the.
But what's his name? The.
Let me see.
Homelander.
Yes.
Okay, Homelander, who is so impressive to me because he is so menacing. Because now, once you realize what his powers are and that he really is just, you know,
fucked up.
not what he seems,
mm-hmm.
Every time he smiles at somebody, I'm like afraid.
Yeah.
Because he can just snap his, you know what I mean? It can just be like, anytime he wants, you're done.
Anthony Starr.
Yeah, and he's the star of Banshee.
Okay.
Which in that one, he's like the good guy, but who does, he's never really happy. He's not really doing, he's not a particularly nice guy or a good guy, but he's the guy you root for.
Yeah.
So I have no, and Banshee is an excellent show.
I got to get into that. That was Stars, right?
Cinemax.
Okay, see, there you go.
The first three seasons of Banshee, the fourth season was a little disappointing, but the first, I mean, you should still watch it if you make it that far. But it's just every episode is basically like a 50-minute action movie, but like good.
I don't even think I have Cinemax even more.
I think the first anymore. Two seasons are Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Or they were for a while, so they probably still are. But this guy Joel Rodriguez, I don't know if you know him. He ran a show for a little bit, and I was Facebook friends and Twitter followers with him. But he had made the suggestion that that's who should play Batman.
Huh.
And in my mind, I was like, you know what? That's not bad because he's just been playing these kind of dark, you know, in Banshee, he's like the good guy who's very dark. And in this one, he's the bad guy who pretends to be good.
Yeah.
So he's always on that line. But I think The Boys I just watched it because I was like, let me watch this so I can eliminate it off my list. And I was like, that was superb.
Yeah, it's very good. It is. I think that show and The Watchmen, what just floored, The Watchmen just leveled me because I wasn't expecting it to be that black. I was like, oh, it's cool. Regina King, I love her. But then you start with the Oklahoma massacre, Black Wall Street. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Because people on Twitter were like, oh my God, the Oklahoma, what the fuck? I was like, all right, guys, let's calm down here. I pulled a JL. I was like, okay, guys, it's just been one episode. Let's cool our jets here.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should ever, and this is Twitter in a nutshell, I'll never declare something unless I'm making a joke.
Yeah.
This might be the best show I've ever seen. after 1 hour. You just can't. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I was just like, holy shit, are you kidding me?
Give Watchmen all the awards.
Because I was... Give it,
sir, it's 15 minutes into the pilot.
Give
Calm
them
down.
All the things. Give them all the things.
Give them. I made a joke. I said, as of this time, 308 shows have been given all the awards so far.
Yeah, of course they have. Yeah, that's, you know how we are on Twitter. To me, that was incredible, but the best episode was, I think, may have been like four. The episode where she takes her grandfather's...
Oh, when she takes the nostalgia.
The nostalgia. Oh, holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
So, like, I was watching it, and I was like, are you... And then I watched an interview that Damon Lindelof did on Collider. He's from up... right up the street from me in Teaneck, like, minutes away from me. And he was like, yeah, you know, I grew up in a diverse, you know, town, you know, but, like... And, you know, everybody's liberal and stuff like that in Hollywood. And then, you know, I started reading Ta-Nehisi Coates. I was like, holy shit.
it's a very, you know, like, hearing him talk about the show.
Yeah.
Very informed. Mm-hmm. Very into, very, nothing was done accidentally. Like,
right.
Everything had, and normally I don't like to watch a show or a movie and be like, all right, man. Like, when I left The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe.
And I'm surprised you saw that. I didn't even see it yet.
Fuck that. I hated that movie.
I know you did.
Like, I hated the experience of it. Like, I didn't, I was like, I want to leave, but I'm in this mindset of like, but what if it gets nominated for like four Oscars? I'll feel like a dummy for leaving. That movie sucked. I hated it. I hated being in the theater for it. I hated it, but I was like, I don't want to see a movie and then need someone to, like, explain it to me so I can understand whether or not it was good.
This is the same guy that did The Witch, The Vivitch.
Which I hated.
You hated
The Vivitch.
Yeah.
But when I saw Watchmen, I got most of it. But then when I listened to an interview or two with him, it only expanded my appreciation of it instead of making me feel like, oh, he was being too clever.
Yeah.
Instead, it was like he was just extra meticulous and extra layered with what he was doing. It was very impressive.
And you know, he had black people in the room, in the writer's room, unlike Tyler Perry. I mean,
oh, poor you know what?
Oh, my
poor
God.
Poor Tyler Perry.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
we all know
dude.
He's a bad writer, but like, I love reading tweets because Rod shared some of them.
Uh-huh.
Shared a thread. I love seeing the tweets that are like, maybe if you hire, we have plenty of black writers. This guy doesn't have to apologize to a fucking person.
Right.
For how much employment and opportunity he has created.
Mm-hmm.
He's allowed to, even if it sucks, he's allowed to do it. Like, he created a fucking empire. If he wants to keep writing his shitty movies and that's his corner that he keeps for himself, then that's what he does.
Yeah, I don't agree with
him.
I'm
saying, but he could make better movies if he hired writers, but if you create a billion-dollar, you know, studio that employs tons of people in a majority black city and has given acting opportunities to some of our biggest stars early on in their career, he doesn't have to be like, yeah, you know, you got an A-plus in four of the five categories, but you only got a C-minus in opportunities for black writers, so now you're canceled. Like,
I don't think he's gonna get canceled, but
I know, but in terms of like, then that's what he kept for himself while being generous and creating a humongous business.
Do I think it's shitty that what he's doing, like, he could be hiring more writers? Yes. Am I going to be watching his Netflix movie on the 17th? Of course I am.
I did like that he has a movie coming out called Bruh.
I will be watching that too, whatever, however I can. But it's like when he did this movie that Craig Robinson was in, where it was like he was the people's. I think it was like a 2013 movie. Craig Robinson was a star, and it was written by Tina Gordon, who, like, it was like Tyler Perry produced it. It was like Craig Robinson, Kerry Washington, and David Alan Grier. And I was like, oh, if he keeps doing stuff like this, was a fun movie. If he sometimes does this, it's dope. But it seemed like he kind of veered away from that. And that movie was like 7 years ago. And I know he had his hand in that one. But anyway, so we both loved Watchmen. Best performance by an actor in TV series drama, Olivia Colman for The Crown.
I have not yet. I'm finishing The Mandalorian tonight. And
okay.
Our next TV streaming thing is The Crown season 3. So.
Okay, because I have not seen one episode. Her being in it has me intrigued. What's another white woman that I like that's in that
series?
Well, she
was my favorite part of Fleabag.
Well, okay, she was great. I think she's phenomenal. Who's the girl? She's in a Soderbergh movie called Unsane, and I like her a lot. The lead, she was in the first couple of seasons, I guess.
Claire Foy.
Yes, yeah, I like her. So
yeah,
should I
good.
Watch that series?
She's in First Man, which was my number one movie of 2018.
She didn't get to do anything. She didn't do anything, though.
Well, you know what? Sometimes
she's
men
a woman.
Are talking.
Shut up, bitch. Men, are we talking?
I'll let you talk, now let me talk.
That's what the Firestarter crew, that's what those guys say. Shut up, bitch, we talking. Like, it's like, okay. Yeah, I saw her in, what did I see her in? The Girl in the Spider's Web, First Man. I have not seen the movie Breathe, but I do like her. I like her shit. So Olivia Colman won. She beat out Jennifer Aniston, Jodie Comer in Killing Eve, Nicole Kidman and her partner her castmate Reese Witherspoon.
They might have canceled each other out.
I mean Jennifer Aniston's castmate. I like The Morning Show. I've only seen 5 or 6 episodes.
That's the only place we don't really watch TV in the bedroom, but we have the Apple TV device there.
Oh, so how do you like that?
I haven't watched. We haven't watched it yet, but we will.
I mean, just Apple TV Plus in general.
Oh, I don't use it. She had it for a while.
Okay.
I don't. I just use my my deluxe smart TV.
Okay, because I just got a code from. SAG, like this, like a screener, you can watch them all.
Ooh, another SAG reference.
A light flex. I got a $20 residual check the other day from being in a TV show for 5 seconds.
Wow. Get that paper.
Showbiz. I some people are kind of turned off by that, but I don't. I think it's fun to see these big-time actors, Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, chew scenery, and I hear it's really I've liked what I've seen.
I heard it's good too.
But I don't know. Like Big Little Lies season 2, I don't think they needed it.
They didn't need it, and unfortunately, it's like somehow they added Meryl Streep, who was good.
She was good,
and yet delivered a much weaker product. I thought.
Yeah,
that season 1 of Big Little Lies was the Chernobyl of its time.
It was terrific, and it's like you end it. They need to take note from some of these BBC series where they do 8 and that's it. You can fucking appreciate it for what it was, and they move on. You know, I don't know, man. Best performance by an actress. Okay, we did that. Best performance by an actor in a limited series or motion picture. Made for television, Russell Crowe in The Loudest Voice.
I did love his climate change speech. He was like, I'm in Australia right now protecting my family,
okay.
So here's what we should be doing. I thought that was the one category, because I've maintained that Chernobyl was the best thing I saw this year.
Okay.
But I thought When They See Us, people were upset that didn't get nominated.
Mm-hmm.
I thought When They See Us had 2 great episodes and 2 mediocre episodes.
The last one and what? The first one?
The first
one?
And the last one I thought were excellent.
I agree.
And I think that it was weird that Jarrell Jerome didn't get nominated.
Well, you and I know why.
No, I know, but in other words, he won the Emmy, and I thought that he was the standout. He was given the best part.
Right.
And he delivered. But I wasn't as mad at the show not getting nominated. But I thought that it was ridiculous that he didn't get nominated.
Yeah, that was a terrific performance, and it's kind of like I want to see him play somebody that's not sad. My thing is, as a black actor and a black performer, like, would I do a movie like that if I was offered a role playing a death row inmate that didn't do it? Of course I would. But as a fan of just film, do I want to see sad black people all the time? I don't think
Yes.
so.
No.
No. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, the shit that, you know, like, it's kind of, I guess it's, I don't know, man. It just, I want to see a little more nuance, you know? It
Sure.
doesn't always have to be tragedy. Best performance. But yeah, I didn't see any of those. I did see Sam Rockwell and Fosse Verdon, which I blew through really quickly when I was watching.
Did you like it?
I fucking enjoyed that.
Oh shit! Yeah, Laura loves Fosse Verdon
You know,
or Verdon.
I'm a big Michelle Williams fan, and I think like she's another person that I'm like generational great. I saw her on Broadway in
When you're
Blackbird.
raising Heath Ledger's child, you always have a place at my dinner table.
Dude, she see what the thing about her, you know, like she made that leap from being a TV star on Dawson's Creek. She the choices that she made, like these indie dramas. I got to go back to this movie, Wendy and Lucy. And it's
See,
an
wow, I was going to say Blue Valentine, but
oh, Blue Valentine.
you've
Oh,
always got a one up with your indie credentials.
I wasn't trying. I honestly wasn't trying to. I honestly wasn't trying to. But like, Blue Valentine is fucking amazing.
It's really good.
And
That was during the got like that was when we were living in Ryan Gosling's world for like 20 months. You know, that was like Beyond the Pines, Blue Valentine, Drive, like when he it was just a Crazy Stupid Love.
And the reason why, you know, I raved about Waves, you know, earlier on in the show. I had when Tim Hall and I, as soon as I saw Waves, I called him up. And I was telling him, like, this shit is like Place. It kind of reminded me of Place Beyond the Pines, where it's like two stories similar. I don't know. It just kind of reminded me of that movie. And I thought that movie was fucking fantastic. There's another film since we're on Michelle Williams, which she did win, this fucking movie. She was in this movie called After the Wedding that came
You didn't
out.
see her acceptance speech, though. She pulled out an aborted fetus and threw it on the stage and said, "This is why I'm here now, bitches."
Yeah. She I fucking love her. But there was this movie.
Damn, is she Queen of the Starlets? I would have put Brie Larson in that position.
Well, see, Brie
Is Michelle
Larson.
Williams the number the starlet, like emeritus, like dean of starlets?
It's hard. You know what it is, dude? So Brie Larson, you and Rod, you guys created that agenda. So this was like 20,
Short term 12,
short-term
correct?
12, yes.
I haven't even seen it, but now I know that movie by heart
It's a
because
fucking fantastic film. And I
Is
remember
that the
because,
one that had Rami Malek in it
yes, it
too?
had Rami Malek, it had Lakeith Stanfield. It's a
Wow.
all-star cast.
That's like your version of like The Outsiders or something where it's like
Outsiders or fucking The Big Chill or some shit. Yeah, 'cause I remember it vividly. 'Cause I was in San Francisco for the like opening for Hardwick. It was September of 2013,
Oh boy, first we get the SAG, now we got opening for Hardwick.
and I didn't open for him that much after that year, really. So I, you
See, he
know.
got the reverse bump. He got me too'd as soon as he separated from mundane festival orbit.
He never did the podcast. If he'd have done the podcast, maybe. He's
He might have
still
been
doing fine.
protected.
He's still eating, man. Actually, it's funny. Ah, fuck. Well, his ex told me about The Last of Us, and I was skeptical. So I kind of want to hit her up and be like, I think I might have hit her up and said, "You were so right about The Last of Us." Because I think at one point I was like, I was an idiot. I was like, it's not going to be better than Tomb Raider. It's not fucking better than Tomb Raider. And you raved about it. And it came out in June of 2013.
at the end of 2013, I think I listed it as my number one thing of the year.
You did. You did. I remember that. And
like across all media.
Right, right. And I think I got it in November as a present to myself doing my first theater opening for Hardwick in North Carolina. And I was like, holy shit, were you right? But like, I remember when that game came out, everybody was like, oh my God, the first 15 minutes, what the fuck is, oh my God, oh my God. And then 2014, I finished it because I got stuck when you first meet the clickers in the subway.
Right, right.
And I said, fuck this game, this is too hard. And then when I found out they were coming out with the DLC, I was like, okay, I got to finish it. And I fell in love with it. But
all right, I hate to do this to you, but
we gotta go. We gotta go.
You know,
go.
Just give me get like we can. You want to just go to like best pictures or
best,
is there any category?
Let's do
that
best. What you want to talk about? Best picture is 1917. I haven't seen it.
1917. I enjoyed a lot.
Okay.
I think it's. He's. I didn't. As soon as Sam Mendes started talking, I had no idea he was British.
Really?
Yeah, I knew his movies, but I don't remember ever hearing him speak.
He's married to Kate Winslet, man.
They're exes now.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah. No, I knew all that, but, like, I just had no idea he was British. So once I heard him speak, I was like, oh, I think this might also win Best Picture.
HFP, baby.
And it was – I've read some criticism of the movie is, like, it feels like the New York Times especially was harsh on it, where they were like, it's like stylistically showing off, but
uh-huh.
without substance.
Yeah. Because
it's basically like a war version of Birdman, which I love.
Really?
Birdman.
Okay.
In terms of it's literally shot like it's one shot.
Okay.
It's impressive. It's an impressive cinematography sort of effort.
Okay.
But getting past that, I kind of enjoyed the movie. Like I sat there and was like, this is really good. Even though, yes, it's kind of a show off gimmick.
Mm.
It's also, I think, well done. And, like, you know, you're following these two soldiers on, like, an urgent mission. So I think it's kind of giving you that urgent, constantly moving feel of, like, being there.
Okay. I definitely want to see it. I'm looking
forward
to
it. Yeah, it was in my top 10 for the year, for sure.
What did you think about the acting awards, Brad Pitt getting Best Supporting and... And,
wouldn't have given it to Brad Pitt, but I think it's inevitable that he gets it. I think he was good in that movie, but I think it's his. It's like that's how they're going to honor that movie. Like the Oscars, I don't think are going to give anything else to Once Upon a Time.
Yeah,
but they are going to give Brad Pitt the Oscar.
And who won Best Actor?
Best Drama Actor?
Taron Egerton. No, more, that was Motion Picture Comedy.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix won for Joker. Yeah.
Yeah, which Laura, that's her favorite movie of the year.
Okay.
Joker. I mean, if
wow.
anybody's going to like...
Wow, a woman love Joker?
Well, if any woman is going to love a show,
I get it,
about
I get it. And
a
she,
failed homicidal comic...
Yeah, she loves you, so she loves...
my
got
girlfriend.
It. and I guess we should just end on that.
The only thing she likes more about Joker is that he looks like he can stick to a diet.
Is she there?
She's here. But
that's hilarious, man.
Yeah, but I just bought it for her, so it should be here tomorrow.
Okay.
I think my hesitation is probably because I'm like, that's Heath Ledger's role.
Yeah.
But it really is very different.
It is different. It's a different flick.
I don't think Joker was great, but I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was very good. As far as best actor, when it all comes together, like for instance, I'm always partial to when Leonardo DiCaprio goes outside of his usual zone.
Yeah.
And I really liked him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Is that performance better than Calvin Candy?
No.
I don't think so either.
I think that's probably my favorite, like not favorite because it's good, happy, but
mm-hmm.
I thought he was, like we've discussed this before, I think if they weren't politicking for Walt to get the supporting actor because
right.
it was easier to win,
mm-hmm.
he was the lead actor. Him and Jamie Foxx were co-leads.
Sure.
And the supporting, the scene-stealing, look-at-me performance was DiCaprio. That was the supporting performance. And I think that's the one he should have won his first Oscar for.
Yeah.
But he wasn't even nominated. But I really like it. It's like a humorous, he's not even that likable a guy. He's sort of self-pitying, but there's also some real humor.
Right.
I thought he was great in Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like De Niro in Irishman, but he wasn't nominated. But who else was nominated? Adam Driver is very good.
Yeah. Bale in Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, that's just he's a foreigner. And I really liked Ford versus Ferrari.
Antonio Banderas, Pain and Glory. I saw that. It was good. It was just, you know, I watched it at the Landmark on 57th. Had a nice alcoholic
cider. That is a great
cider.
Theater.
It's fantastic.
That's where I saw Irishman. I took my mom to see Irishman there.
Okay.
That theater. That's, you know what? That's who I'm going to add. There, boom. I feel like the Landmark, and I will hope they are, but I'm going to ask if the Landmark pays their people.
They're an art house.
Wages.
You might get lucky, or you're going to have to go to Westchester to Jacob Burns Film Center. You know? So.
But, I have no – I think Joaquin Phoenix is going to win it, and he's sort of due.
Yeah.
He's that next actor who is over – you know, you go from due, but there's never been a role – that he should have won for.
Mm.
I mean, he's been, in other words, he could have won, but I don't think there's ever been a year where I'm like, oh my God, they robbed him.
He got robbed, yeah.
Whereas, like, you can look at Denzel Washington not winning for Malcolm X,
right.
But then you have to give it to Pacino because he didn't win for Godfather 2.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's always catch up, whereas I think Joaquin Phoenix, this might be just the right time for him.
Yeah.
Where it's like he's a great actor who has been recognized but has never been robbed.
Right.
So it's like they can actually get it right with him. So he's probably going to win, but I did like DiCaprio in Hollywood a lot.
Yeah. And and you had Renee Zellweger win for Judy and Awkwafina for
I never
Farewell.
Saw I think we're going to rent The Farewell like on demand.
I think it's great.
The reviews are off the charts for it.
It's in my top 5.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Yeah, it's in my top 5. It's beware their subtitles. Let your xenophobia go, and you know, but it's good. I really liked it. Well, JL, dude, this has been terrific, man. So I guess
they got everything. They got everything that I have in my head, basically.
Yeah,
we're spilled out over the course of 2 hours.
We're going to. You, me, and Jeff are going to talk soon. Hopefully, maybe next weekend. Oscar noms come out next week on Monday.
Oh, shit.
So we're going to have to do our best of thing that people seem to like. And Jeff,
oh, yeah, the one movie I know you praised it. I know Jeff loved it.
You hated
we
Last Black.
We disagree on Uncut Gems. I think he loves those two dudes way more than
the
Safdie, I do.
He loves them, yeah.
Right, they're like his they're his boys, so it's mm-hmm. like... When they make something good, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But Parasite, I think we all agree on.
Yeah, I think that's my number 2, and you hated The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Hated it.
Yeah, you didn't. There's too many black people in it for you. I get it.
No.
Let me see. We'll talk about that next week. But your boy Adam Sandler, what'd you think about that performance? And then we'll wrap up.
KJ, come look at KJ. Come look at the KJ. Come look at this. Come on, KJ. I'm trying, okay? I'm trying. I'm going to have one crying scene. Oh, I'm fucking losing. There, that's the performance. I just gave you Uncut Gems in 30 seconds. KJ, come on, help me look at this, KJ, come on. I found it entertaining.
Yeah.
I liked it, but I left. The problem is when these movies get so hyped,
yeah,
you leave with a B+ thinking you just saw a C- because you like go in like, oh my God, they're saying this is like amazing, mm-hmm. maybe the best picture of the year, and then you're like, it was pretty good, but it feels disappointing
now.
Do
you think it's because people haven't seen... I don't know how you feel about this, but they haven't seen Punch Drunk Love or they haven't seen Spanglish.
Probably, but
they realize he can actually act, that he's actually talented.
Right, and he is he another one of these like secret Juilliard kids?
No, he wasn't a Juilliard guy.
NYU. He was an
NYU guy. Yeah.
But he's somebody who was arts inclined. It wasn't like he was a goofball who just, you know, like Robin Williams was a Juilliard guy.
Of course, yeah.
I'm laughing though at the commercials, because when they were trying to build up the Oscar credit,
right,
the previews are like dark and like gritty, and it's like you've never seen Adam Sandler. Now that it's out in wide release, the marketing campaign is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen commercials for it since it got released wide that are like playing Christmas music and showing only like humorous clips, and I'm like, they're trying to convince people that this is like a regular Adam Sandler movie.
It's not. Yeah, it's
just
not
to get the money. They figure once you pay us, we don't give a shit.
It's not Murder Mystery, which was kind of decent. It was, you know, it was fine.
Was Murder Mystery good?
It was just like, I was entertained.
Okay.
You know, I like Adam Sandler.
Right.
I wish, you know, you know how like, or you know, there's a rapper that's dope, but the beats that he picks aren't that great.
Right.
You know, he's like that.
But Parasite, I could see winning.
It's gonna win Best Foreign.
But I could see it pulling off what Roma couldn't, which is Parasite. To me, it's not like American Beauty in terms of plot, but mm-hmm. I thought the tone was just like American Beauty. 85% of the movie is dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last 15 minutes
are poignant,
are just dark,
yeah,
and like thought provoking.
I hope you're right. I don't think you will. I want you to be right. I don't think you will be.
I wouldn't be like if you showed me, since I can now gamble legally in from my home. If you showed me odds for Parasite, if they were enticing enough,
mm-hmm.
I would bet on it. Like, in other words, if Parasite's, like, the third favorite to win and the odds are, like, 5-2, not worth me making a big, big bet. But if you show me, like, 10-1 odds, I'd be like, put $100. I'll put $150 on Parasite, because I think it's actually, if it were an American movie, every critic would be going, this is the movie for our time.
Yeah.
But it's a foreign film, so
right.
You don't see as much of that narrative, even though you see some of it.
Yeah.
But now I really do have to go.
Yeah,
sorry.
Let's do
so
it.
I guess we hit the major ones at the end.
Thanks so much for doing this, JL. We'll be talking soon, probably, hopefully next weekend.
So everybody should check out Making Podcasts Great Again, which is available on all podcast platforms. And then Righteous Prick, The Return, Righteous Prick, is available at jlcomedy.podomatic.com. I know it's kind of annoying, but that's how you get right to it.
All right. Thanks so much, JL.
Thank you. This is fun.
This is great as always.
Happy New Year, everybody listening, and to you again.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.